Hello, folks. I'm John Myrie, and welcome to the Wisconsin Northland Outdoors. On this week's show, we have reports and tips for you from Jarrett McCarthy down at Hayward Bait and Bottle. And then we talk fisheries and our lakes with Wisconsin DNR fish biologist Max Walter. Lots to cover on this week's show, all coming up right after these messages.
At Hayward Power Sports, we know it's fun to roam the boat shows. But remember, we have awesome deals every day, and we'll be here long after the shows. As a sampling of our Lund inventory, we have a Pro-V Bass, an 1875 Crossover, and an 1875 Impact set up in our outdoor showroom. Buy one today and claim huge Lund rebates up to $7,500. Plus, we'll have it ready to go for you right away this spring, and we'll even include free storage for next winter. Come check out our everyday boat show at Hayward Power Sports, just 10 minutes east of Hayward on Highway 77, or online at haywardpowersports.com.
Riding along in my automobile.
Bumping into things unexpectedly? Make your first choice for collision repair. Ernie's Auto Body, featuring the most advanced collision repair facility in northwest Wisconsin. With a state-of-the-art spray bake-down draft paint booth for that better-than-new finish, laser technology for precision frame alignment, loaner cars available, computerized estimates, written guarantees, and documented unmatched customer service, the clear choice is Ernie's Auto Body, south of Hayward on Highway 63 and Nursery Road, where quality is no accident.
Lynn's Custom Meats and Catering welcomes you to stop by for their great lunch menu. And while you're there, Lynn's also has a great selection of custom-cut meats and sausages, as well as many varieties of snack sticks, jerky, fresh cheese curds, and much more. Lynn's is open Mondays through Fridays from 9 to 5:30 and 9 to 4 on Saturdays. Lynn's Custom Meats and Catering in Hayward.
Today, anglers fish longer. Today, anglers fish harder. Today, anglers rely more than ever on their electronics. It all comes down to catching more fish, and today, anglers rely on Amped Outdoors lithium batteries, period. Visit ampedoutdoors.com today to power your outdoor experience.
We're recording this week's show down at Hayward Bait and Bottle, talking to Jared McCarthy. And Jared, you know, we're about the end of February here, and we don't have a lot of ice out there. But there's still a few guys creeping out on that ice, and they're catching some fish.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for the lakes that do have ice on there, it seems like fishing's been solid, to say the least. But we've got some water out there that's starting to open up. We got some warm temps coming. Got a little bit of cold in the forecast or what have you, but, you know, probably by the time this airs, we're going to be sitting in mid-50 to 60-degree weather.
Yeah, if you're going to get ice fishing, especially this year, because ice, there's not a lot of ice anywhere. It's 8 inches, maybe, you know, maybe something like that. But there's a lot less in a lot of spots. So if you're going to go out there, you want to be extremely, extremely careful.
Very, very careful. You know, make sure you got your float suit on. Make sure you take a spud bar, life jacket. Take a buddy, you know, and if he's a good buddy, he'll walk out there first.
That's what Bob Schuster used to always say, too. Yeah. Anyway, we talk about the fishing, crappies, bluegills, what?
Yeah, absolutely. Crappies, bluegills, northern. Some guys out there catching some nice northerns on some dead bait. Crappies and bluegills, obviously, with a little bit of warmth that we've had. It's really starting to turn these fish on, really kind of starting to move them in a little bit shallower than where they normally are this time of year. But, yeah, fishing's been good.
You hearing much of anything with the lack of amount of ice we had this year? You hear much as far as the weed, how the weeds do out there? Still some green weeds out there?
Yeah, from what we've been hearing, we've been seeing green weeds all the way through February here. You know, we were out looking early February, and I know I saw some green weeds myself. So luckily, without, you know, any big heavy snow or any thick ice this year, we maintained some green weeds, which should be awesome moving into spring here.
Yeah, well, you know, fish will start using that stuff as soon as they possibly can, too, especially the pike. I mean, in the pike, this is a time when that cooler water, you could find the pike anywhere in that water column. You'll find some of the bigger pike up shallow, and some of them still out in 18, 20, 25 feet of water, but once we get the warmer weather, the bigger pike are always deeper.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, which is awesome for fishermen right now because you really can't go wrong in picking a spot. But, yeah, a lot of guys doing really well with pike out there.
You hearing anything from up on the big lake up there? I know there was some people out there trolling already on some of the salmon and trout.
Yeah, just like last week or whatever when we talked, you know, I hear guys up there, but I'm not getting much feedback from the guys that are coming off the lake.
You know, and that's going to change here. As we go into March, there'll be more and more people getting the itch to get out there in the boats. And you know, not just boats, but the stream fishing this year is going to be good for trout, fishing suckers, whatever you want to fish. Because unlike a lot of years where you couldn't get to the river because of snow, you can walk right up to the riverbanks and down the riverbanks, and it's pretty easy picking right now as far as getting in the rivers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've been out on the river already a couple times, and as far as getting into the river, you know, there's no snow or anything, and you know, there's not going to be a lot of runoff, so those rivers are going to stay fairly low. So there's going to be a lot of different ways to access a lot of different spots on the river, and you know, fishing will be good.
You know, I kind of enjoyed back years ago just going down by river in the spring, the first few warm days, and taking a nice lawn chair and throwing out some night crawlers and catching a bunch of suckers and carp. It was fun to just catch fish.
Absolutely. You know, I did a lot of that growing up, coming up here, and where we don't have a whole lot of carp up here, it's mostly suckers. Man, I tell you what, if you want to fight a fun fish, carp are the way to go. They are just all muscle.
My grandpa and I used to go fishing years ago in southern Minnesota, and he'd catch them and smoke them up, and they're actually very good if they're out of clean water. That back there wasn't clean water down in southern Minnesota at that time, but up here, I mean, suckers and carp and stuff, they're living in a pretty pristine environment compared to in the metro areas.
Yeah, absolutely. And coming from a metro area, you know, I fished a lot of those fish that were in that dirtier water. But, you know, never a more fun fish than a carp on a river. Yep.
You know, even on the Mississippi River, that's got some of the best walleye fishing you're going to find anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good fishing over there.
And there'll be guys heading for that. I mean, this is the time of year we always start to see some people heading down those rivers and over to the Fox River and stuff. And, you know, it's a little bit of a run, but, you know, we got to get out and explore sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from here to, you know, a couple of those spots only could be a couple hours. So if you're really looking to get out and do really well for walleye and you're not too thrilled about waiting for the ice to get out, you know, those rivers are the way to go.
You know, and getting ready for it. I mean, we got so many things we talked about, trying to get things ready to go for the spring. I know you guys do a lot of, like, spool and line and stuff here for guys getting ready for spring.
Absolutely. Getting reels, you know, ready to roll with line, and making sure your tackle box is geared up with all the essentials coming into this spring. You know, we're just starting to put a whole bunch of our stuff out right now, going through kind of brand by brand or what have you. You know, if you're looking to get a jump start and everything, definitely stop on by.
I know you got a huge selection of Rapala stuff here. I mean, they really seem to add a bunch of stuff.
Oh, yeah. We added a whole bunch, too. I mean, I think our Rapala section is probably, you know, 30 to 36 feet long. So we've got a lot of different baits, a lot of cool colors that you just don't see all over the place.
Interesting stuff, Jared. I want to thank you for taking the time here.
Thanks for having me again, John.
Well, folks, you know, we need to take a break right now and hear from some of the fine sponsors that make this show possible every week. When we come back, we'll be talking to our local DNR fisheries biologist, Max Walter. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after these messages. Hayward Bait and Bottle is your one stop for the Hayward area's largest selection of rods, reels, lures, fishing electronics, boating supplies, and much more. Whether you fish for bass, walleyes, panfish, or muskies, gear up for the upcoming fishing season. And if you're getting ready for the spring turkey season too, they also have just about everything you'll need for a successful season. In the bottle shop, you'll find a full selection of beer and liquor. Hayward Bait and Bottle is your one-stop sport and bottle shop.
The Hayward Lakes Visitors and Convention Bureau in Sawyer County, Wisconsin welcomes you to our Northwoods hometown. No matter the season, no matter the activity, you'll always be surrounded by our great outdoors. What more could you ask for in a vacation destination? Woods, waters, world-class events. Contact us for information on lodging, dining, attractions, events, trail conditions, and more. Order your free vacation guide and start planning your getaway today. Visit us at haywardlakes.com or call 1-800-724-2992.
Hayward Power Sports has remodeled our service center. This is service manager Damon Schrader. Don't worry, we have the same friendly faces with a service team of 16 highly skilled and certified technicians and a parts inventory that's second to none. We're ready to service and repair your BRP and Polaris machines, plus virtually every major outboard on the planet. And remember, it's always a good idea to think ahead and bring your machines early for the next season. See Hayward Power Sports just 10 minutes east of Hayward on Highway 77 or call 715-462-3677.
Welcome back to another segment of this week's Wisconsin Northland Outdoors, and this part of the show is brought to you by the Hayward Lakes Visitor and Convention Bureau. For more information on lodging and vacationing here in the Hayward Lakes area, check out their website at haywardlakes.com. Well, folks, you know, one of the people I get on here from time to time is our local Wisconsin DNR fisheries biologist, Max Walter. Had a chance to sit down with Max the other day talking about our lakes, fisheries, and a lot more. Max, good to have you on the show here again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about this, you know, spring. I mean, it looks like we're probably going to have spring early. I mean, it would be really kind of strange if we didn't, because there's not much ice out there on the lakes. You know, with very little ice on the lakes, and the weed growth seems to stay green even a lot of places, and a lot of things going on in the lakes that we normally don't have. Well, what's that going to do to the spring as far as the fish out there?
Yeah, so we are definitely expecting an early ice out. You know, we pay a lot of attention to when that happens and kind of keep track of the process of how quickly it's going to happen every year. And, you know, usually the first however many days of 50 degree weather is just taking care of the snow on top of the ice, and then the actual ice starts melting. Well, we don't have any snow on the ice, and we don't even have very thick ice. So with the 50 and 60 degree days that we're seeing in the extended forecast for March, yeah, it's probably going to go early. It may set some new records. I think 2012 was one of the earliest ice outs on record. That was the first year I worked up in this area. We could be even earlier than that. No, there's two ways to look at that. In the short term, it's fine, or maybe even good, for the fish that are already out there, right? So fish that's already alive in the lake, very low risk of winter kill this year. Oxygen should be good just about everywhere. No problems. High fish survival. That's generally positive, or people, you know, will hear that and think that's really positive. The challenge is, and this is hard to say, but we don't always want all the fish to survive through winter. Winter is actually kind of a nice check or control on abundances of certain types of fish, especially panfish, right? And you think about the period in time in which we had some of the biggest panfish. There was also times when we had really hard winters that would keep the population abundances in check so that the fish that did make it through had better conditions for growth and they could get bigger. So if we have more and more panfish that are making it through and you know, really, really mild winters, that could become a problem. The other issue that we see is these really early springs are typically not good for reproduction of fish like walleye. They may be laying their eggs a full month earlier than what they were expecting. The eggs may not be as fully developed, and then you still have to go through several months where the conditions could be really variable. You know, if those eggs get laid in March, they still have to, the little fry have to survive in late March and in April when we can have more cold snaps, wind events, things like that. Maybe the lakes even refreeze at some point. You know, who knows what could happen here? This is not normal, and it's not good for sensitive fish species when you have things happening that aren't normal. Right? Walleye are counting on some degree of normalcy for their whole spawning plan, so to speak, to work. So that's kind of what gets me concerned, is it may be yet another missed opportunity for good walleye year classes. And there's a lot of lakes where we can't really afford more missed opportunities.
Lots of things, a lot of factors involved there. You know, and you mentioned you had to weed out some of the smaller panfish, but a lot of people may not realize this, but I've seen some figures from you on the Chippewa flowage, for instance, when you look at crappies and adult crappies, actually, even not counting the little babies, the adult crappies, when it comes to the mortality, how many fish die every year from a combination of natural mortality and, you know, catch and release mortality and harvest, it's quite high, actually.
It's quite high. That's a consistent message every time you kind of look under the hood at data for fish populations. It's really hard being a fish. It's a rough life, and lots of those fish die in ways that we don't really see it. You know, if you're catching crappies, you're catching the ones that are still alive, of course, but 30, 40, 50% of the crappies in a lake can die in any given year. That's kind of a natural, normal thing. And that's why they lay so many eggs and have so many new fish coming in every year to try to replace them. So those are challenges. And, you know, you mentioned like mortality. Another thing we'd expect with a winter like this is I think there was less people out fishing. We'll see what the data ends up showing. But that means more fish would have made it through that wouldn't have gotten harvested by anglers either, which typically includes bigger fish. So, you know, it's possible some people will be seeing some slightly bigger fish this spring or throughout this next year because there wasn't as much harvest through the ice. That may not be, you know, noticeable in all instances, but that might be something that happened too.
Well, one of my topics, too, is bigger panfish. I mean, bigger bluegills, for instance, and big crappies. Those things take a lot of years to get that big. Now, when you're talking 30, 40, 50% mortality in a course case of a year, odds of a fish living 10, 12, 14 years in the lake, it gets lower and lower. It's astronomical, the odds for a fish to get that big.
Absolutely. I mean, the odds of a bluegill making it from a fertilized egg to a 10-inch bluegill is probably 0.0001% or something in that neighborhood, right? It's less than, way less than 1%, because most of those eggs aren't going to hatch. The ones that do, most of those fry aren't going to survive. Most of those little ones aren't going to make it. And then even once they get into adulthood, you still have pretty high mortality. Even the odds of an 8-inch bluegill making it to 10 inches are less than 50%, because it's going to take them a few years. And this mortality is still pretty high. There's still a pretty good chance they're going to get either caught and kept by an angler between 8 to 10 inches, or they're going to die of some natural cause, which could be anything. Starvation, oxygen in the winter, maybe predation, maybe parasites or disease or something. There's just a million ways to die if you're a fish.
And basically, so, you know, with all the advantages we've seen in electronics, the sonar, and the rods and reels, and the knowledge we have, and the better boats and everything else, that just makes it harder and harder and harder for fish to get big. If you want to see bigger crappies, bigger bluegills, we got to start throwing the big ones back and keeping the ones that are more plentiful. And the crappies, that's 8-9 inches instead of looking at 12 inch and 11 and 12s. And bluegills, you know, throw back everything over 9 inches if you can get, or even 8.5. Because if you want big ones, you got to have to throw some big ones back.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see this if you ever look at some of like the fisheries reports that I create. They'll have, you know, that figure that shows all the different sizes of fish that we caught, right? And it always kind of looks like a hump. And the hump is always, you know, the most abundant sizes of fish are not 9 and 10 inch bluegills, right? It's 5, 6, maybe 7 inch bluegills in some lakes. And then by the time you're looking at 8 and 9 inch bluegills, those are becoming quite rare. So the concept that you're just talking about, which we often call selective harvest, is taking the fish at their most abundant sizes and focusing the harvest there while lessening the harvest on the less abundant sizes or the more rare sizes, the bigger sizes. And the theory there is, it's relatively easy for a bluegill to make it to 6 or 7 inches, right? We get pretty good production of 6 and 7 inch bluegills. It is harder for them to make it to 8 or 9 or 10 inches. And so anything we're doing, harvesting those fish that are there or are really close or could get there within another year or two, is just going to decrease the odds of producing 8, 9, 10 inch bluegills. So anglers do have a role in this. There's the natural mortality component. We can't control most of that. We can't control the diseases, and we can't control the oxygen and things like that. But we can control which fish we're harvesting and the numbers of fish we're harvesting. We do that a little bit with regulations, but now we're kind of asking anglers to think about it from their standpoint and go a little farther with their own harvest practices. So if a lake says, you know, if the regulation says you can have 25 bluegill, well, what sizes are you taking with those 25? Are you taking the 25 biggest bluegill you catch? Because if you're doing that, you're decreasing the chance of that lake ever producing anything right. bigger. Or are you taking the more abundant, like, mid-sized ones, which is what you were just talking about?
Well, you know, and when you're talking, you know, that, it's all fish, basically. I mean, when it comes to the best quality eating fish are going to be those mid-sized fish, not the biggest ones.
Right. Best quality eating, potentially, you know, for in a lot of cases, they're less tough, they're younger, and the one of the big things there is, you know, healthier from the standpoint of, you know, contaminants, things mercury like mercury and other stuff. That stuff all accumulates over a fish's life. So older, bigger fish, especially predators like pike and walleye, are going to have a higher concentration of that stuff. Now, that doesn't mean it's, like, unhealthy to eat. You know, we have recommendations on how much fish people can eat from Wisconsin waters, and individual waters that have higher mercury or something like that have, you know, consumption guidance that we kind of tell people this is what we think is okay. But the smaller fish and panfish are almost always going to be healthier than bigger fish and predators.
Well, we're talking about the crappies out there where you and bluegills. And how's our walleye populations doing up here? I mean, for a while we were having problems with some of those struggling, but you know, are they still struggling?
Yeah. So the way I've kind of started to think about it in my mind is, you know, we do have different tiers, right? We have kind of our highest tier would be lakes that continue to have strong natural reproduction. These are the lakes that are going to carry the highest abundances of walleye, the most consistent fishing opportunities, and from a management standpoint, the cheapest, right? We don't have to put in a bunch of money to keep that walleye population going. It's doing it on its own. And that's really kind of now down to about 6 in Sawyer County. You're looking at Moose Lake, the Chippewa Flowage, Grindstone, Round, Sand, and Windigo. Those are the lakes that all still have pretty strong, consistent natural reproduction to sustain their populations. Then kind of you have this next tier down, which is lakes that we stock where it works quite well, where the habitat receives those fish well, conditions are good, good survival, and you can get a very fishable population of walleye through stocking. So that would be places like Teal, Big Shatak is a pretty good one. Black Dan down by Winter is a pretty good one. I'm sure there's a few others I'm forgetting right now. Then we kind of have like the lower tiers, which are lakes where we've tried stocking them. Maybe it works a little bit. Maybe it doesn't work much at all. It's hard to say whether it's cost effective. And those are the ones we're looking at as far as, you know, are we going to continue stocking this lake? Is this still worthwhile? Or do we need to make a decision to focus on other species? The good thing is we haven't seen a whole lot of changes, at least in the last 10 years now. Most of those lakes kind of changed their status 20 to 30 years ago. A lot of them lost their natural reproduction. We haven't seen a lot of other lakes kind of like falling off the list. Those six that I mentioned that still have natural reproduction have been fairly consistent, but there's even more emphasis now on protecting those, right?
Right.
Because as you're losing some of these walleye fishing opportunities, we're not losing anglers that are interested in walleye. So you have more and more people going to a lake like Grindstone or a lake like Round looking for that opportunity that maybe would have gone elsewhere in the past. So the angling pressure is still, you know, as high or higher than ever, but we have, you know, a kind of a shrinking field of play. And so that's something we have to think about, is we don't want to lose these opportunities in the future just, you know, by the trends of what's already happening with where anglers are going.
Well, folks, you know, we need to take yet another break and hear from even more of the fine sponsors that bring the show to you every week. When we come back, we'll have the second part of that talk we had with our biologist, Max Walter. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after these messages. Hey folks, come on over to Hayward Ace Hardware and check out the area's largest selection of firearms, ammo, and accessories. We carry top brands like Browning and Sig Sauer, and we have a great selection of the newest and hard-to-find models. We've got a large selection of ammo with more coming in daily. If you need a scope, we carry great brands like Leupold, Hawk, and EOTech, and we'll even mount it and bore sight it for you too. We even sell suppressors and silencers. And don't forget to check out our Guns of the Week. Huge discounts on a variety of pistols, rifles, and shotguns that change every week. So stop on in to Hayward Ace Hardware, your firearm superstore. Hayward Ace Hardware, Highway 63 North in Hayward, or give us a call at 715-634-8700.
Hayward Animal Hospital is a full-service medical and surgical hospital featuring on-site laboratory, digital and dental x-ray, in-house pharmacy, and online store. Dr. Ostrander has 40 years of experience dealing with illnesses, injuries, surgery, and dentistry. Hayward Animal Hospital offers urgent care appointments and emergency surgery daily. Please call early in the day for these appointments. They open at 8 a.m. Hayward Animal Hospital is located 1 mile east of Hayward on Highway B. Call 715-634-8971.
If you'd like to have your time fishing be more enjoyable and productive, hiring a fishing guide can be a good investment. Whether it's learning more about fish patterns throughout the year, learning how to use your depth finder to find the best spots and fish, learn how to use that GPS to get the most out of it, or learn better boat control. A day on the water with a guide can really help you to be a better angler, as well as make a day on the lake very enjoyable. To book a guide trip this year or get more information, you can find us on the internet at www.wiscnorthlandoutdoors.com and then just click on Area Guides.
Welcome back to the last segment of this week's Wisconsin Northland Outdoors. And folks, we're going to jump right back into the second part of that talk we had with Max Walter.
Well, there's so many factors involved when it comes to that, you know, and I know a big one that sometimes we've talked about is changes in the climate. Mm-hmm. But also, are we aging our lakes faster than normal? Because when you start taking a pristine lake that has nothing on, maybe a cabin or two, and then all of a sudden you got a whole bunch of cabins, I don't care what you do, you're still going to get nitrates into the water. You're going to make the water more fertile. You have bigger weed growth. You got big power boats running around which stir up the soil or stir up the bottom. I mean, are we aging these lakes just by the fact that we're using them and populated?
Well, that really gets at how complex, particularly this walleye issue, is. We have some lakes that are natural lakes, some lakes that are flowages, where we've created the lake and the lake's maybe only been there for about 100 years, right? Triple flowage.
Yep.
It's only been there for 100 years in its current form. You know, it was a river before that with some natural lakes, but... So you have that, and then, you know, the other factor to think about is a lot of these were not native walleye lakes at all. They were put in there sometime in the 20th century, And we're kind of trying to treat them like, oh, these have always been here. We should always expect them to do well. Well, that's not really the case. You know, they got introduced in some lakes. They had a pretty good run for a few years as a new species in the lake, which is common. And then we kind of started to see them come back down to earth. So that's the other thing we think about, too, is what's a native species and what's not as far as what we spend our time on. But your question of habitat's really important. There are a ton of changes in the habitat, and some of them are big environmental climate changes, like a really mild winter where the ice goes out really early, warm summer temperatures, lakes becoming more clear, more weedy. None of that stuff's good for walleye, and that's the patterns we're seeing, right?
Yep.
That stuff's very good for panfish and bass, and we expect they're going to continue to thrive, but those things aren't particularly great for walleye. And then you have the other question of like more, you know, direct physical human impacts on these lakes, which is, you know, removing vegetation from shorelines or more nutrients getting into lakes through runoff, fertilizers, all that type of stuff, and how quickly that can change a lake. All the above. It's all the above. You know, there's very few of those factors where you look at those types of human impacts and say, oh, this is actually good for walleye. No, it's, you know, it's all kind of chipping away at what a healthy ecosystem would look like. And that's why a lot of what, you know, you hear from DNR is focus on healthy shorelines, focus on vegetated buffer strips, leaving wood in the water, minimizing your impact. And one thing I'll tell when I tell lake associations when I go talk to them is try to trick the fish into thinking that nobody lives there. Try to make it look like it's just a wild shoreline. And so, and if you do that, the fish will respond in kind. But when you have mowed lawns and, you know, all that other stuff, it doesn't look like nobody lives there.
You know, if we're talking about things like the Chippewa flowage I mentioned, and flowages in general, wouldn't they age faster because a lot of that was fertile forest ground that was dammed up, so it was actually, you know, more fertile dirt than a glacial lake that was scoured out down to sand, rubble, and gravel?
Yeah, so I think what you're talking about there is, you know, the amount of kind of just like nutrients that are naturally right. present in the system. Yeah, and you have huge differences around here. I mean, in my coverage area, I have Big Chetak, which has one of the highest natural phosphorus levels of any lake in the area, and that thing gets green. And then you have Round Lake, which sits at the head of the watershed, doesn't have much flowing into it as far as creeks or streams or anything like that, carrying nutrients. It's a big natural lake. It's been there for thousands and thousands of years. It's very clear. It doesn't have a lot of nutrients. Two very different systems. When you talk about lakes like the Chippewa flowage, that has a huge riverine influence, right? And that benefits walleye. Walleye loves some flow. And so when you have lakes or flowages with big rivers coming in or a big riverine influence and some flushing, some moving water that they can spawn in, they tend to do quite well. And that's why you see a lot of the flowages are still walleye strongholds and probably will continue to be beyond some of the other natural lakes, regardless of kind of the amount of nutrients. But the Chippewa flowage, the Turtle Flambeau flowage, the Minon flowage is a little walleye factory because it's got all that water flowing into it. So walleye love flowing water. And really when we're looking at a lot of our natural lakes that don't have that flowing water, there's a little less margin for error for walleye in those particular types of lakes.
You know, and you, when talking about the Chippewa flowage, there's a huge difference between the east side of the flowage and the west side. The east side is more riverine than the west side is.
Absolutely. And we see east to west differences there in walleye and also things like smallmouth bass. Much more abundant on the east side than the west side because they have that flow there. And then you see changes in water color and weed growth and all sorts of stuff that, you know, just goes to how complex habitat is and the influence of a river, the influence of water color, like stain. And that's why, you know, we tend to try to oversimplify things when we look at fisheries, especially fisheries that are experiencing a problem. And I get this all the time when I look at public comments and things like this. Oh, well, you just got to do this. You just got to change this one factor. Well, for starters, many of these factors can't be manipulated by people, right? We don't have a switch that says how the water clarity is going to change or something like that. And then the other thing is all of these things are interconnected and all of these things are, you know, all these processes that fish are undergoing, whether it's growth or reproduction, are dictated by more than just one factor typically. And a lot of things are changing all at once.
You bet. Well, a lot of interesting things there, Max. I want to thank you for taking the time with us here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Well, folks, you know, we're about out of time for this week's show. I'd like to remind everyone out there that if you miss a show, go to our website at WNORadio.com. And from there, you can link to our podcast site, and the show is also on Spotify and Google Podcasts every week. And also, if you're looking for information on vacationing and lodging here in the Hayward Lakes area, check out the Hayward Lakes Visitor and Convention Bureau website at haywardlakes.com. Thanks for listening, folks. We're out of time, and we'll be back again next week with another interesting show for you.
Listen with me, I'm gonna take you there to our Wisconsin Outdoors, our Wisconsin Outdoors.
This program has been produced and hosted entirely by Wisconsin Northland Outdoor Communications. Any and all views expressed are not necessarily those of the station.